from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today, I'll get a preview of the 2013 Songbook Hall of Fame ceremony at the Palladium.
I'll find out about the Artsy Girls program, which raises money for school arts programs.
And I'll find out about the new proposal in front of our city council to raise money for public art. Plus, there'll be our calendar events we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. On June 29th, the Michael Feinstein Great American Songbook Initiative will honor the musical contributions of Frank Sinatra, Liza Minnelli, Rita Moreno, and Jimmy Webb at the Palladium with their second Hall of Fame ceremony. Travis DiNicola spoke with Karen Kelsey, the initiative's director, about the event.
Karen, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you here today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, this is a fun time for you because I know right now you're staying awfully busy preparing for the 2013 Songbook Hall of Fame ceremony. Of course, this is the Michael Feinstein Great American Songbook Initiative that you're the executive director of. And this is a pretty big deal for you. You'll be honoring some greats, some of my favorites, Frank Sinatra, Liza Minnelli, Rita Moreno, and Jimmy Webb this year. Tell me how this all comes about. I mean, doing this Hall of Fame, what the sort of the purpose of all of this is for you.
Certainly. The Michael Feinstein Great American Songbook Initiative was started about 5 years ago, and our mission is to give young people the opportunity to learn about this music and to preserve it for future generations. And one of the ways we decided to do that was to start the Songbook Hall of Fame. We looked around and recognized there's a Country Music Hall of Fame and a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Sure.
But there was nothing that specifically honored the music of this time period, which is generally seen as the early 20th century, 1920s through about the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
So we started one, and last year was the first year, and this is our second year.
Well, with all the work that Mr. Feinstein has done, of course, in preserving the Great American Songbook, I mean, it sort of makes perfect sense for you guys to have the Hall of Fame as well.
It does. It does. And again, this does speak to our mission to keep the music alive.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want this music to just go into a vault somewhere and never be heard and never be appreciated. So by creating some publicity around this and honoring people who have given so much of themselves in their musical contributions to the songbook, it's a way to honor them as well as introduce people to the music who may not be aware of it.
Now, the ceremony is going to be a pretty big deal up at the Palladium. Tell me a bit about this, because it's taking place June 29th, and you've got some great performers coming in. It's going to be a huge night.
We do. Actually, this year, it's an encore celebration, and we're doing it on two nights.
Okay.
There is a dinner dance at the Indiana Roof Ballroom on Friday evening, and there will be a performance by Michael and Friends that night. And we want that to be reminiscent to that time period of an elegant dinner dance, and what better place to have it than the Indiana Roof. So the second night on Saturday evening, that will be the actual Hall of Fame induction ceremony that will be held at the Palladium. And we have some special guest artists coming in to honor the honorees. Frank Sinatra will be the winner of our Legends Award,
mm-hmm.
which is awarded posthumously to someone who made a significant contribution to the Great American Songbook. He will be honored by performances by Michael Feinstein and also Megan Hilty, recently of Smash.
From Smash,
sure.
Sure.
A lot of people recognize her name and her work. The Songbook Award is given to a songwriter, either a lyricist or composer, who has made a significant impact by writing and creating the beloved songs of the songbook.
Mm-hmm.
This year, that's Jimmy Webb. And he will be honored by Tom Wopat.
Who is such a great performer. I've seen him live a number of times, and he's just such a great singer and dancer and so charming on stage.
Yes, we're very excited that he's going to be with us. And then the third category of the award is the New Standard Award, which is being awarded to two people this year, Liza Minnelli and also Rita Moreno. And they will be honored by... Well, separately, actually, Liza will be honored by Michael Feinstein and Megan Hilty. And then Jimmy Smits is coming in and Jose Feliciano to join in celebrating Rita Moreno
that's
and everything
cool.
she's contributed.
When I saw that Jimmy Smits was coming in, I thought, well, that's an interesting choice. That's great.
It is. I don't know if you had the chance to attend last year, but the show...
No.
Last year, we awarded awards to Cole Porter, Alan and Marilyn Bergman, as well as Barry Manilow. And we had a show with performers. Clay Aiken was here. Laurie White was here. Andrea McArdle was here. And they put a show on to honor them. And it's an amazing tribute to the award winners.
Let me ask you something about Jimmy Smith, because you know, with Tom Wopat, I mean, for years people would say, oh, Dukes of Hazzard, and then, but now more and more people recognize Tom Wopat for his work on Broadway stage as well as other stages. Is Jimmy Smith a singer and dancer too?
He does. I think earlier in his career, he does have some credits, yes, where he did perform on stage. Of course, people would most recognize him for L.A. Law and
NYPD Blue, sure.
PD and all that. But he did, he performed in New York in the 1990s in Cabaret, and he also was in the Broadway play God of Carnage.
Huh, okay. Very cool. Well, that's great. Well, this is just going to be a huge night. Lots of stars planned. I'm sure some stars that are surprises who show up as well.
You never know what could happen at the Palladium.
and Michael Feinstein brings in all of his friends for a great celebration, right? I mean, that's a pretty neat thing. I mean, we're very fortunate to have the Palladium, as well as the Great American Songbook Initiative here in Central Indiana.
Right, and I would just welcome anyone who is interested in coming could go to our website, thecenterpresents.org, and they could find information. I think there are still some tables available for the dinner dance and the performance. And this year, one ticket, you get to go to two nights of entertainment.
That's a pretty good deal.
It is a good deal. It'll be fun.
Excellent, excellent. Very good. Very briefly before I let you go on it, because I know you got a lot of work to do, what else can we look forward to this summer from the initiative?
This is a huge time of year for us, and I'm so glad you asked me about it. One of our other big projects is our high school Great American Songbook Vocal Academy and competition.
Yeah.
We have expanded. This year we are in 22 states. We were in 11 states last year, so we've doubled our national footprint, and we hope to be a national event within the next 2 years. We right now are having regional events across the country. I just got back from L.A. last evening, and we picked two sensational singers to come. We will have Great American Songbook High School Vocal Academy and competition will be an entire week. It will be the week of July 21st through 26th. These 10 students from across the country are coming here for master classes with Michael Feinstein, June Monheit, Sylvie McNair, Sandy Patty,
wow,
and other local
what
instructors.
What a great opportunity for them. And then their final performances or competition, that is open to the public, right?
Correct. That will be Friday night, July 26th. We would love to have everyone hearing this come and see the performance. It's a tremendous evening, and the students, the level of talent just continues to blow me away every time. And this year, as I said, we have already selected some of the students. I'll be in New York this weekend and then in Ann Arbor the following weekend to select the final four. But it's a show you don't want to miss.
Very good. Karen, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter today. So much great stuff coming up for the Great American Songbook Initiative, both the Hall of Fame and competition, as well as I know a lot of other things. As you said, people can go to your website for more information.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with Karen Kelsey, the director of the Michael Feinstein Great American Songbook Initiative. You can find out more about the initiative and the June 29th Hall of Fame event at thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Ariana Silver had just turned 9 years old when her school experienced budget cuts and had to reduce their art instruction to just one day a week for only half the year. She decided to do what she could to bring attention and financial aid to the problem and began designing and selling her handmade jewelry to friends and classmates. Ariana's mom, Jen Silver, joined Sharon Gamble in our studio to tell the rest of the story.
Your company's story is one of those examples that make me say, I love capitalism. I just think we are so brilliant about how we see a social need and we fill it with an economic solution. So tell us how Artsy Girls got started. What was the inspiration?
Oh, thank you. Okay. Well, I wish my daughter Ariana could have been here today. She's on a field trip to Connor Prairie with her school, which got rescheduled due to rain. So she's a child first, so we always make sure that comes first. But it really started because of her. We were starting a new school in Scottsdale, Arizona, and she's always just been one of those girls that loves to draw and paint and make jewelry, and you know, really that's how she'll spend her free time, with a pad of paper and pencil. She's an artsy girl. And she went to school, you know, started this new school, and it turns out that this school only offered art for half of the year for one day a week, and that just flabbergasted. Oh, I know. And this was, you know, a very, you know, solidly middle class neighborhood, not an area where you would think necessarily should be struggling. And it really just opened our eyes to the budget cuts that have happened in schools across the board, all economic situations. So she really came home and complained.
Wait, how old was she at the time?
She was 8 years old at the time. And, you know, school art class, of course, was her favorite thing she looked forward to. And, you know, I'm one of those people that believe if you're going to complain, let's try and think if we can be part of the solution, you know, be the change you wish to see. And I had just had a new baby, so I thought, well, this will be a good, you know, mother-daughter opportunity to teach some life lessons. And I said, well, you know, what can you do about it? What can you do? And she came up with the idea of, well, I'll hand make some jewelry, you know. And I had bought her some craft kits and whatnot, you know, just to occupy her time after school and everything. And so she started making these, actually, this fabulous jewelry. I started wearing it and getting compliments. And she started wearing it to school and putting little price tags on it and, you know, really not selling much, but more just bringing attention to the cause. And the other girls just loved it. And we bought her a few little business cards, and it kind of went on from there.
Wow, that's amazing. And along the way, though, you had an opportunity to, maybe is the better way to say it, explain how such decisions get made in a school system, and explain what taxes are about, and explain how budgets work. And
it's been a wonderful opportunity to teach her, you know, financial literacy. I mean, it's interesting because one thing we've learned as we've gotten into this ourselves is really just the schools get it. I mean, the schools and the parents and the administration at the educator level, they all love art in the schools. They want art in the schools. They know it's an effective way to teach. But it's really these budget cuts that are kind of coming down from above, and the teach the test mentality that's kind of coming down from above. And as we've taught her how we need to run a business and how those budget decisions get made. We're learning how the budget decisions get made at the school ourselves, and, you know, how we can best impact the schools by helping empower them to solve the funding cuts, grassroots style.
Now, did you start out just to try to address art classes at the school level where she was going to school?
We did. And, you know, when we started, we had no idea what this would become. It really was just going to be a kind of a mommy daughter thing. And, you know, she had little business cards and she was selling her handmade jewelry. And it really started to take off the girls at school were interested. I mean, they all talk to each other and notice what each other's wearing, and
sure,
they express themselves through their accessories and their hair and their nails, even at that age, you know. And then what happened is she was turning 9 and she wanted to have a birthday party. And, you know, they have these themed birthday parties. So she asked me, hey, Mom, you know, can we do an artsy girls themed birthday party?
Aww.
And I thought, oh, sure, that sounds like so much fun, you know. So we went online and ordered a little banner that said artsy girls and, you know, had some crafts. She decided instead of just making jewelry for them, she would have as an activity at the party. Everyone would come and she would teach them how to create their own bracelet. And we did face painting and, you know, all this stuff. And that was really the first inkling that we knew this could be bigger than what we thought, because the moms were really excited. I mean, you know, this was, I think, the first time they saw what we were up to. And just seeing the banner and it coming together a little bit, they were interested in, you know, how they could support the arts, and that their girls really, you know, wanted more support for creativity in art at school as well. So that's really how we thought, well, maybe there's something to this. We could expand.
Sure. And in the meantime, so this started a couple of years ago, and during those 2 years, you moved from Scottsdale to Indianapolis, right? Did that happen in the middle of this business taking off?
Exactly. About a year and a half ago, just after Halloween, we moved to Indianapolis. That's where I grew up. So this was our hometown. And we came back here and, you know, and joined the schools, got the kids in great schools here.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, I think back to my schooling experience here, and I was an Arsenal Technical High School grad, and I also attended the Magnet at Broad Ripple. And, you know, those artistic classes did more to shape who I am as an adult than anything else I think I've ever experienced in the educational realm. So, you know, we just continued with this passion of helping the schools, and you know, we joined a new school district and started helping these schools here. In fact, I went back to my alma mater and we started running fundraisers at Arsenal Technical High School. We've helped raise thousands of dollars now here for Indianapolis, Indiana schools. And, you know, once we saw, okay, these schools get it, they want these fundraisers, we've started hiring sales teams so that they can, you know, these fundraising consultants can help us expand nationally and you know, like I said, really just empower the schools, empower the parents, and get them, you know, getting the creativity in the classroom that they want.
You have these wonderful products. I was trying to pretend that I was in the target demographic, being a, you know, 12, 14, 16-year-old girl, and you have the girls who comprise a little posse of girls who have completely different styles. They're friends and in some cases relatives of your daughters. Tell me how they are a part of the business.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, you know, as I said, this started organically. We really did have an artsy girl, and she really did have friends who were artsy girls. And, you know, when we started, we didn't want this just to be about selling products. I mean, we sell the products because that's an easy, automated way for the schools and the families to basically buy, you know, award-winning products that they're buying anyway. We wanted to make sure it was brands they trusted. And
they're very age-appropriate.
They are.
You know, they're,
yeah.
They're,
everything from Crayola and Alex Toys, you know, to just fashion.
And they're, we should point out, because we're both girls, we should point out they're for boys as well as girls and young men as well as young ladies.
Yes. Yeah. We knew we would sell the products because that would be the means to the end. That would be the way that parents and, you know, they could just come to the site, do some shopping, and then up to 40% of everything they buy goes to the school that they select.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't just want to be about selling things. You know,
sure.
We wanted this to really be a cause-driven business where it's a gathering place for girls to come that's safe for them to meet other like-minded girls. We wanted to promote the idea of civic action, so we help them find ways to plug in and, you know, petition their politicians, and you know, we do these things called artsy adventures where we get people together in real life and we'll take them all to the theater or to the ballet, and, you know, really let them, you know, connect. And we've started interviewing primarily women, Broadway stars and journalists and award-winning, you know, best-selling authors, so that we can really show that, you know, it's not just about arts being enjoyable, which of course they are, but it's also a viable career path for these girls, which I think is so important. And then along with that, we've created this cast of characters, the Artsy Girls, and a book. We've published our first book, and we have the second one in the works. And these are just, you know, a group of girls that any girl can identify with. You're going to find one of them that just strikes you as similar to yourself. And, you know, they go on an adventure, and it's a little bit of art imitating life, where these girls band together for a cause they believe in and help bring the arts and creativity to their school.
What has changed in your daughter as a result of starting this with, as you say, maybe it was just originally going to be a mommy-daughter quality time. We're going to do something together. She'll see that I support her values. But what changes have you seen in her as a result of this catching on and you as a family shaping this business?
You know, it's hard to capture in words. That's just such a profound question. There's just something magical that happens, I think, when particularly girls in this society, but all children, when they really see that they can make an impact and that their passions matter. You know, education, unfortunately, you know, most kids are spending most of their days in school, quite frequently being talked at and, you know, filling in bubbles and not necessarily having true authentic interactions. So I think for her to see and for her peers to all see that they can really band together and make a difference, and that their desires of how they want the world to be shaped really are being taken seriously, not just by other kids, but by adults. It's just been amazing. She's just blossomed. I mean, it's gone, like I said, beyond what we ever really, you know, anticipated. And I feel like we're just getting going now. You know, I hope we're in thousands of schools nationwide, you know, and by the end of the year. But, you know, I mean, she's meeting with politicians, she's meeting with best-selling authors and Broadway stars, and she's doing all the interviews herself. She helps write the scripts and she puts on the microphone and she, you know, she does it all. So I think her confidence level has soared, and, you know, in return, it's kind of created a cycle where that impacts her own creativity. As her confidence grows, her creativity grows. As her creativity grows, she steps out of the box more and her confidence grows. So it's a beautiful thing. And it's in a, you know, it's exactly what we want to have happen for every child that's out there as we increase their creativity.
I want you to say more about, in particular, we have some younger listeners, we have teenage listeners. Say more about what you said a little bit earlier, that your arts experiences and classes did probably the lion's share of shaping of who you are through the years.
Well, I was in my earlier years, when I was Ariana's age, that I just can't imagine I could have done what she's doing now. I was so shy. I you know, she's speaking with the mayor and senators, and she just blows me away. You know, it wasn't really until I got to high school that I, on a whim, tried out for a show choir at Arsenal Technical High School. And I met a magical woman named Ms. H, Cynthia Hartshorn, who actually just this year is being awarded the Governor's Award for the arts, for everything. She's been an educator for 26 years. You know, thousands of students have passed through her halls, and I think she treats every single one of them like her own child. Hmm. And she is tireless. She has high expectations for everyone. You know, she gets you out of your shell. So, you know, we did hundreds of performances. You know, I starred in musicals and plays, and by the end of high school, you know, I had transformed because of those experiences and because, you know, she believed in me and allowed that seed of creativity in me to blossom. And I think that's what happens with creativity, is you begin to find who you are and what you're capable of, you know, at its best, and critical thinking and taking chances and all of those good things, you know, beyond the touchy, warm, fuzzy side of art. There's really concrete skills that you learn that make an impact in today's economy. And yeah, that's my story of my high school art.
Sharon Gamble with Jen Silver, mother of Artsy Girls founder Ariana Silver. By purchasing products like jewelry and art project kits from Artsy Girls, individual schools and clubs raise money to support school art programs. And while you, our listeners, are most likely to be among the already converted, a reminder that numerous studies show that kids exposed to the arts score 100 points higher on the SATs on average, increase their spatial IQ scores by 56%, and have better grades and test scores in every subject. In fact, arts-engaged kids are 4 times more likely to be recognized for academic achievement. You can learn more at artsygirlsinc.com, and that's artsy, A-R-T-Z-Y, girls, G-I-R-L-Z, inc.com. That's artsygirlsinc.com with 2 Z's in there.
Hey, Travis, are you making plans to make a bonfire?
Sure, Sharon.
You're looking at me like, wait,
really.
It's hot enough out. Why would I make
what
a bonfire?
What are you talking about?
Well, remember in old times, in ancient times, this was an old English belief that if you make a bonfire, you can jump over the bonfire and your true love will be revealed, but only if you do it on the summer solstice.
Really? I've never heard that before. My grandfather told me stories about jumping over bonfires when he was a kid, but he did something different when he would cross the fire and didn't have anything to do with the solstice. Anyway, that's a whole other story.
Well, we're getting close to the summer solstice. It's almost officially summer, almost the longest day of the year, and
that's right.
We have ways for you to spend those daylight hours on our calendar we call
What do we do? That's right. When you got long days, you should fill them with the arts. I'm going to start with City of Angels, which is such a fun musical. Buck Creek Playhouse is performing this now. When it was on Broadway originally, I got to see it and won a bunch of Tony Awards. And it's a really sort of fun, tongue-in-cheek musical that's all set in Hollywood in the 40s. And it's a big spoof of like the film noir era. And there's a neat way that the story is told both in color and black and white in the musical. Very fun, worth checking out. Buck Creek Playhouse.
Love it. Hey, Butler University is holding its first annual Base Camp.
Base Camp?
Base Camp has nothing to do with a NASA program,
okay.
Just sounds like it.
It does.
It's BASS, and a bunch of, surprise, surprise, bass players have been gathering and perfecting their skills on campus. And there are free performances open to the public this Friday night. So if you're hearing us on Thursday night, make plans to go this coming Friday night, 7 o'clock, Idson Duckwall Recital Hall, Butler University. The Bad Boys, which of course is spelled with a Z on the end, the Bad Boys of Double Bass, Bass Quartet and Performance. Music of Runswick, Enescu, Deke, Mercury, I don't know whether that's Freddie Mercury or not, I'd like to know more, and others. And also Saturday, June 22nd at 11 a.m. at Schrott Center for the Arts, that's the final camp concert. You can hear all 5 bass chamber ensembles performing, and that, of course, is the reason to go. But also, if you haven't had a chance to hear music in Schrott Center for the Arts yet, oh my gosh, they got it just right, perfectly balanced sound. So, Friday night at 7, Saturday morning at 11, 2 chances to hear musicians from Base Camp at Butler.
Nice. Hey, something else going on Friday nights, not just this Friday, but every Friday through August from 5 to 8, the Be Independent Georgia Street Block Parties that are taking place, and they are free, and there's also a Bud Light Boardwalk Beer Garden, and but every Friday down on Georgia Street, there's live music, and there's a huge block party, and lots of cool stuff going on, including also next week, the next 5x5 competition is going to be part of the Georgia Street Block Party, but you can check it out, and again, free bands every Friday.
Woohoo! Hey, here's something looking ahead just a little ways, but you're going to want to block out the whole day, so I thought I'd put it on our calendar early. Saturday, July 20th, the Right Stuff Writers Conferences and the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel will produce Across the Arts, a gleeful literary celebration. It's a day-long event. It runs from noon to 6 p.m. with an after-party and movie screening following the conference, and you can learn more at thecenterpresents.org. Again, that's Saturday, July 20th.
And you can actually learn more when I'm doing an interview in about a week or so.
I like that even more.
There you go. Hey, also something to put on your calendar for future notice. On July 13th, there is a treasure hunt that Indiana Landmarks and the Old North Side are putting on with antique and collectible dealers and yard sales. And it's a big sort of combination of treasure hunt, sale, and lots of fun all throughout the Old North Side. And at Indiana Landmarks Center, you can pick up a treasure hunt map from more than 40 antique and collectible dealers and fun food trucks and all types of things that are all part of this. More information at indianalandmarks.org. That's July 13th.
If you're looking for something to do to cool off this Saturday, you can do that with a family tour of the IMA's permanent collections. You're not going to see everything because it's just a half-hour tour, but the reason it's a half-hour is it's appropriate for families and children of all ages, even the little teeny tykes. Get them started. Started early. It's also free. You can meet on the second floor near the welcome desk at... You can meet on the second floor near the welcome desk at 1:30 or 2:30 this Saturday, June 22nd. And while you're there, make sure you take your family out to 100 Acres and interact with the giant sculptures, all of them very playful, and check out the newest one out there
as well.
That's
right, the signs sculpture out there. Very cool. Hey, Sunday, the Asante Children's Theater is presenting Star Midnight, and this is a theater piece totally appropriate for kids, and the description is that it's a mix of Bully Spite, hip-hop, and Snow White. That's an interesting combination.
I've not seen that before.
I know, but that's 4 p.m. at the Madam Walker Theater Center on Sunday, June 23rd, Asante Children's Theater.
Hey, calling all artists, especially public art artists. You've been hearing about public art lately a lot. Keep Indianapolis Beautiful's IPL project Green Space is looking for proposals for Fletcher Park. That's the triangle-shaped park at the intersection of Brookside Avenue, Arsenal Avenue, and 12th Street. The proposed artwork should be an outdoor interactive piece that relates to the heritage and environment surrounding Fletcher Park, the surrounding neighborhood of Windsor Park, its location along the George Kessler designed Brookside Parkway, and Pogue's Run Creek, which is just half a block east. The design competition is open to Indiana artists, and the deadline for submission is July 10th, coming up very quickly. You can find out more at indiearts.org.
Very good. Hey, I got one more thing, and that is this Saturday, June 22nd, the Indiana Winds Symphony is sponsoring the Carmel Festival of Bands. It's a family-friendly festival of music showcasing musicians from all over Indiana, and it's a day-long festival. It starts at 11 a.m. on Saturday, features 9 bands, each performing for about 45 minutes. They'll be taking the stage at the Mini Doan Gazebo located in the Carmel Civic Square, just south of 126th Street on Range Line Road, and you can bring a lawn chair or a blanket and go out there and relax and enjoy this free concert on Saturday.
Cool. My last item, plan ahead for July 4th. Actor and stuntman Derek Mears, you might recognize him for his roles in Friday the 13th and Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, also has a long history as a comedy sports performer, and he's going to be a special guest at Comedy Sports Indianapolis on July 4th. You can find out more at IndieComedySports.com, and sports is, of course, spelled with a Z on the end. In fact, as Travis and I spell our names with a Z on the end,
that's
what all the cool kids do.
And we'll be back next week with more Z's and more things to do on that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do's.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Indianapolis City County Council Vice President John Barth has an idea to raise money in support of public art. Travis DiNicola invited Councilor Barth, as well as the Arts Council's President Dave Lawrence and Big Car Service Center's Ann Laker, in for a roundtable discussion about public funding and public art.
It's great to see you all in the studio today, and start by welcoming Ann Laker. Ann, great to see you.
You too, Travis.
And City Councilman Barth, great to have you here, sir.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Dave Lawrence from the Arts Council.
Hi there.
Hi. So, Dave, I'm going to start with you on this one. And if you would sort of set this up for us, just an overview as far as why the arts are important to the city, to the cultural fabric, to the economic development. Why are the arts important?
The arts are important for many, many reasons. They give voice and character to the city. They allow all of us a way to connect and celebrate and share, both in good times and bad. And the arts have a real benefit to the city in terms of funding, too, and economics. And sometimes that's overlooked, but it's extremely important. I can tell you that the arts in Indianapolis have an annual economic impact of $384 million. That's every year.
And that's through what? Ticket sales, through purchases, through employment?
That's all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's the money that we pay our artists and arts administrators. It's in ticket sales. It's in souvenir purchases. It's in ancillary spending on sets and designs and costumes and all of that. Everything that it takes to put on a production or a concert, all of those costs are part of that $384
million. $384 million. That's pretty outstanding.
It is. Now, it's down a little bit because of the recession and all of that, but it is, when you think about the size of Indianapolis, the number of organizations that we have here, it's pretty astounding.
And that is specific to the not-for-profit arts world, correct?
That's right.
That does not actually include for-profit entities, for example, like Broadway touring companies, right?
Correct.
That's a totally separate thing.
Yep. This is the nonprofit arts and cultural community in Indianapolis.
How many people are we talking about in terms of the employment? A rough estimate.
It is 13,310. I can be real specific with you.
Okay. So that's a pretty significant part of our economy.
You know, I think when you start talking about the arts as an industry in Indianapolis, I think it makes people stop and take notice. And we are, when we're employing that many people and providing that much economic impact back to the community, it really makes a lot of economic sense to support the arts and really points to the importance of why the arts are important to our community.
Now, how does that compare with other cities of, let's say, similar size or demographics in terms of the size of the arts community here within Indianapolis?
You know, we have we're actually above average in terms of cities of like size, in terms of number of arts organizations and the impact that we have here. So clearly our arts and cultural organizations are doing a remarkable job in reaching audiences, in stretching those dollars, and in leveraging dollars and making the most of those dollars.
And leveraging dollars is a big part of what they do, because in truth, there really isn't a lot of public support in comparison for the arts in our community compared to others. I mean, pretty much arts organizations are relying on private donors, foundations, ticket sales, what have you, right?
Correct. Let me say that, especially with the city councilor in the room, we are thrilled for the support that we do receive from the city of Indianapolis. It's an important sort of stamp of approval and show of support from the city to the arts community. But when you look at cities of like sizes across the country, we're near the bottom of the list in terms of public support for the arts. So what our arts community has been able to do to leverage that 10, 50, almost 100 times sometimes, dollar for dollar, it's remarkable what the arts are able to achieve.
And currently, right now, the method that in terms of how the city supports the arts is that through the city council, funds come through. It's still through parks, is that right?
Correct. The Parks and Recreation Committee.
And the amount is now
It's $1 million directly from the city,
okay.
And then there's an additional allocation of $300,000 that comes from the Capital Improvement Board.
Okay. And certainly not money to sneeze at. And that money is then provided to the Arts Council, which then re-grants it based on a competitive process to the arts organizations that apply for those funds.
Correct.
Okay. So, but we're looking at about $1.3 million.
$1.3 million. Now, to contrast that a little bit, where we were at our highest back in 2007, 2008, we were giving $2.6 million away. So we've reduced that in half because of cuts, and then the economy and all those other things. You know, I travel a lot and meet with a lot of my colleagues nationally, and one positive thing that I will say about art support in Indianapolis. Is other cities are amazed that we've been able to maintain that funding. Other cities are still receiving cuts every year, and the fact that we're able to maintain this and that we have
a
city council, it's very positive, and that we have a city council and a mayor who believe in the arts and support what we do, I think is important.
Councillor Barth, you wrote a letter to the editor that was published in the Indianapolis Star recently. Some would say provocative, some would say innovative. Tell me a bit about this letter and what moved you to write it and this proposal.
Well, the letter was a way of introducing a concept of a proposal that I'm working on called Percent for Art to sort of start to gauge the level of support and to start the community conversation as to recognizing what we just heard about about the benefit of the arts in Indianapolis as far as an economic development driver. I think that's a story that hasn't really been heard enough. We hear a lot about how sports drives an important part of our economy, and it is, and it's been a very purposeful strategy that's been great and successful. But something else that matters is the arts, and with a fairly limited amount of public support, has garnered a huge amount of economic activity in the city. So the question for me is, how can we do better without affecting the cost to taxpayers and raising mm-hmm. taxes, not doing that, and still have a way for the city to support the arts community and at the same time making our city a better place to live? So the letter sort of laid out the intent of my idea for proposal, which is something called Percent for Art, which is actually something that's been done nationwide and worldwide. In fact, the first Percent for Art proposal in the United States was in Philadelphia in the 50s. Hmm. So looking at that as a funding mechanism, we're actually a little bit behind the curve as far as a method of supporting. Not only in this case, it's specific to public art, but you can expand that vision and have it be really for public spaces. And what can you do to make the city more livable, more engaging, more vibrant? And you can tap into a funding source. And in this case, what it is a percent of the city's investment into a big capital project. So, and more or less, developers sometimes get a subsidy when they're doing mm-hmm. some work in the city, and the city will support them in doing that. And all this proposal does is takes a percent of that subsidy and applies it to a fund that would then be used to enhance public art in the city or make our public spaces better, more engaging, more livable.
Could you give me an example of what that type of construction would be and how much money we'd be looking at? I mean, is there an example of maybe a recent building or recent construction that we could point to?
It's a challenge because the way Indianapolis works, a lot of the subsidies that are given out to developers go through different mechanisms mm-hmm. than directly to the council. Like, for example, there's something downtown called the Downtown Tax Increment Finance District, mm-hmm. and that's a method of financing development downtown, and none of that would be available to the council to allocate in a Percent for Art program. Okay. So the really big capital investments we can't really get to with this proposal. And so they'd really be smaller investments, like, for example, a big infrastructure improvement project in a park. Say there was a big stadium of some kind being built somewhere in the city. You could say a percent of that would go into it. And so because of the mechanism and the structure of the city's finances, it wouldn't generate a huge amount of money, but it would start the process of helping folks to think we can have a mechanism to make our public spaces better and more engaging and more vibrant and more livable, and slowly but surely start chipping away at it.
Could this also involve roads or bridges, or no? Because that's not usually through city funding.
Those are federal funds, mm-hmm. typically. Okay. And so if it's not a city fund, then we wouldn't be able to tap into it.
But we are looking at primarily physical structures that the city is providing some incentive for, would be the idea behind this.
That's right.
Okay. So what is your guess, let's say in a good year, that this 1% could potentially raise towards public art within the city?
You know, I wish I had a number for you, but I don't have that right off hand. And the reason why is because of the myriad of complexities of the city's budget. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually in the midst of locking that number down. It'll be a pretty small number. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a year rather than the millions of dollars.
That's sort of the range I was wondering.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's why we'd have to be strategic and smart about how we picked projects and make sure that they were really the kind of projects that would have like a big impact for the area and they would sort of radiate out and support neighborhoods in general.
But again, this would not be direct taxpayer dollars in terms of I'm not going to see an increase in my taxes.
No, this is money that is already existing as part of the tax base in Indianapolis. We're just taking a tiny little sliver when there's a capital improvement project going on and applying it to public spaces.
The one thing I found really kind of fascinating about this proposal is that it is focused not just on public art, but John, you really have sort of a vision for public art within the neighborhoods, not just within the immediate downtown district. This is something that Big Car and the work that they've been doing through the service center and such has really been sort of at the forefront of in terms of community development through art projects in the neighborhoods. Anne, could you talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. I think a great example of that, and I know Dave can speak to this as well, is the power of a mural. Last December, Big Car collaborated with the Garfield Park Neighbors Association to design and produce a mural. Now, you know, where there was once an eyesore, there's an amazing image that's a gateway to the Garfield Park neighborhood. I think we're talking about the iconography and identity. I think that that's some of the intangible power of these murals that I'm sure that Dave experienced when developing the 46 for 46 mural project,
which was an incredibly successful project through the Super Bowl. I mean, that's talk about a big, you know, public art project that involves so many artists and communities and members of the community.
Well, thank you, and I think that what Big Car does so well, and what we certainly were doing in 46 for 46 too, is the key is trying to get it out to as many different neighborhoods and impact as many different residents as you can, because that's really when people can see that, oh wow, art is everywhere around me, and it's part of my daily life, and it makes my experience being here in Indianapolis better. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what John's proposal is setting out to do, and that's the work that the Arts Council and Big Car do each and every day.
How would you envision this, Dave, in terms of if there was this percent for art, would it be something that you would imagine that the Arts Council would sort of help manage in terms of the same way that it manages other public funds and artists would apply for it? Or?
Yes, you know, in similar fashion to, say, the 46 for 46 program, we do have a public art selection committee made up of visual art experts from all over Marion County and central Indiana that would assist in that process. There would be an RFP or RFQ process depending on the location and all of that, so that we would make sure that we're running through all the appropriate channels and taking the appropriate steps to make sure that the project selected and that the artist or artist teams that are selected are a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And also a part of this, and one of the things that Big Car does so magnificently well, is working with those communities before the art is ever completed. That's really important too. Public art is about a process, and it's about involving the residents and the folks around that area so that everyone embraces the art, it represents them, and it's something that everybody can celebrate. So key to that process will be involving the community as well before the artwork or the artist is selected.
Because there's certainly always the potential for some controversy with public art, but as you said, it seems like, you know, by engaging and involving the community prior to the creation of the art, really having them be a part of it, that helps to alleviate any potential controversy. I mean, certainly, and not like most of the murals, I mean, really don't have a controversial element, but still, when you're putting any sort of expression into someone else's neighborhood, you have to take that into consideration. I mean, Anne, you were sort of nodding your head there in terms of when Dave was talking about the process and engaging the community that's a part of it.
Well, what I think is exciting about John's proposal as well is that the fact is there's so many CDCs and neighborhoods who have already been developing a quality of life plan. Many times that includes an aesthetics or beautification or art component, but there's no money sitting there to implement those. So in many ways, it's helping neighborhoods implement the ideas they already have. And the other thing I love is that we're not just talking about murals, but we are talking about making public spaces engaging, which we all know lowers crime and invites economic activity and community gathering.
So in many ways, Councillor Barth, this is as much as about neighborhood development as it is about public art.
It really is. It's wonderful to hear this conversation, because I've had similar conversations recently with a lot of neighborhood leaders, and this proposal really in many ways sprung out of their desire to continue the progress they've made with making improvements in their neighborhoods. And something in particular they cite is that, especially when you have a more suburban neighborhood that later became part of Indianapolis when UNIGOV was created, there was no like center place. There was nothing that represented the neighborhood. They might have a name, but their identity wasn't completely there yet. And so through, just like Dave said, through a process of planning what they want their neighborhood to be and what they want it to look like and what the neighborhood means to them, they've developed master plans for what are the next steps for infrastructure and encouraging residents and so on. But along with that comes, oh, this name that we have means something, and this is how we want to represent it. And what I think would be really fantastic is if this process takes place and the proposal is passed and signed, I think something that could happen is similar to the murals that we've been discussing. People sought them out and were drawn to them and went to parts of the city they never went to before and met people they never would have met otherwise. Similarly, I would hope that this sort of neighborhood supporting public space, public art program could encourage a lot of cross-neighborhood pollinization and people meeting each other and exploring each other's neighborhoods and learning sort of who they are and what they're about.
You know, one of my favorite things about the 46 by 46 murals is that some of them were placed, Dave, on, and I don't know how intentional this was, but if you're driving down a one-way street, they were placed in such a way that the only way you could really see it was if you were actually walking up that street in the opposite direction. You couldn't drive and see it. And so for a lot of us that were trying to find all 46 of them, it meant we had to get out of our cars and walk around and see the city, maybe even a block that we've driven through every day, but we had to see it from a different angle.
It was very intentional. We wanted to make sure that, you know, Indianapolis is such a walkable downtown and we're such a well-connected city. And that's something that, you know, our Convention and Visitor Association, Visit Indy, really touts. And it's something that, you know, has just become a part of the fabric of Indianapolis. So we wanted to celebrate that as much as possible. So activating those spaces, not only for vehicles, but also pedestrians and visitors, was critical to the process.
Councillor Barth, let me ask you, and this will be sort of the last word here, what sort of feedback have you been receiving since your letter was published?
Generally positive, and in particular around what we've been discussing about the neighborhood activation. But something someone brought up to me that Anne hit on that I think is important is really activating public spaces and making them lively places where people want to be help with reducing crime. In fact, that's really, there's a whole movement in crime fighting that discusses sort of how you activate public spaces and how you light public spaces and make them attractive. And so I've actually had some feedback from folks in the public safety community saying, that's great. That tracks to what was something we've wanted to do for a long time, but I've never really had, been able to do, and doing it this way makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. Well, thank you all so much for coming into Art of the Matter. It's been a great conversation, and I look forward to seeing where your proposal goes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with City County Councilor John Barth, the Arts Council's President Dave Lawrence, and Big Car Service Center's Ann Laker. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I chat with radio personality Paul Irwin.
I'll talk with poet Norbert Kropp about his new book of prose poems.
And I'll meet Sarah Evans, manager of the bookstore at Christian Theological Seminary. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.